You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, whether you're building your credit from scratch or rebuilding after your score has taken a bit of a hit, it's important to learn how your scores are calculated and the basic ways to improve them. Then you can dive into a more detailed guide based on your, of course, unique situation. And to help us in just a few minutes is, of course, Titch, who's joining us on the line. Good evening, Titch.
Hi, Tapelo. Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. I can hear you very, very well. Doing well. Thanks for asking yourself.
I am very well, thank you.
Ah, fantastic. How was your day?
It was a good day. I hope you had a good day too.
I had an okay day. For what Mondays usually are, mine today was just okay. So can't complain. And it sounds like you made a bit of money today, which is good.
I work in formal employment, so I kind of get paid every day. Though the money only comes at the end of the month. So I probably did make some money today, but nothing out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, that our self-employed friends are probably, when they say they've made money, they've probably made a couple of millions.
Yeah.
But they don't do it every day.
So yours will only show at the end of the month. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, the life that you've chosen to live. So yeah. But anyways, thank you so much, Titch. Really appreciate your time, man, and for joining us once again. We're talking about this thing, which I think affects a lot of us, if not all of us, when it comes to this thing called credit score. But I want us to start first by defining it. What are we talking about when you're talking about a credit score?
Cool. So that's a really great place to start, just so we are all on the same page regarding what we are talking about.
Yeah.
Did I say good evening to the listeners?
No,
I don't recall. But anyway, I did. Oh,
yes.
Okay, yeah. Cool, excellent. Don't want my mother turning in her grave there. Like, who raised you?
She's probably very proud. So don't worry. You did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Excellent. I'm glad I did. So, a credit score is essentially. So, what happens in this credit-driven world that we're in is that people that lend money or organizations that lend money are primarily interested in two factors when they give you money.
Yes.
They want to know if they're giving you back money that you are going to be able to repay them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what they really want to know. And they use information to come to that decision. They'll never give you money that you cannot pay back.
Mm.
That's not the point.
Yeah.
In fact, they will not give you money that you cannot pay back plus change, right? So if I'm giving you $1 million and I'm a bank, I'm hoping you can give me kind of like $1 million and a bit more on top for my trouble or for my risk, if you want to get technical.
Yeah.
So in trying to ascertain the possibility that you will pay them back, they will use what they call a credit score, which is essentially an outcome which is meant to give the bank or a lender a degree of comfort around your, firstly, willingness to repay, and then secondly, your actual ability to repay, because your willingness to repay may actually be diametrically opposed to your ability to pay. So they're assessing your financial capability to pay, and then they're also assessing your willingness, which you could count as morality or conduct or behavior. On the basis of evaluating a number of factors, they then give you a score. And that score then says, well, I'm more likely to lend to Titch than I am to Paul. And if I'm going to lend to Paul, then I probably need to charge him a higher interest rate because, you know, maybe Paul is a bit of a, is more riskier to lend to than Titch. And all the information regarding, you know, who you've borrowed from, how much you borrowed, how much you need to pay back, how frequently you need to pay back, how you've been conducting yourself in paying back this money. All of this information is put together in what is called a credit reference bureau. And you know, the law, like in South Africa, is very clear that, you know, registered lenders of money are supposed to submit information to this bureau. So the fact that I may be borrowing from Bank Popeye means that, you know, Bank Spinach is able to go to the Credit Reference Bureau and see how much I've borrowed from Bank Popeye. And on that basis, then be able to say, well, we probably can't give you as much as you want because, well, you need to give some money back to Bank, to Bank Spinach as well. So that's the long and short of a credit score, how it's computed. And, you know, I hope that brings us all on the same page.
Indeed, you've actually outlined it quite beautifully, and I love the analogy that you use there of those two banks. So a couple of things. These banks talk to each other. It sounds from what you're saying, using that Popeye and spinach analogy. You know, they try and look at, okay, that bank borrowed you this much. You want to borrow this much based on certain information and what the weight of the credit is going to be vis-a-vis your earnings, you know, salary or whatever. You might not be able to do that. So that's the first thing I wanted to confirm. And of course, they do this through the bureau. Of course, they don't necessarily knock at the next bank and say, "Hey, someone like this came to you." So they look at the bureau.
Yes, they look at the bureau. So the bureau, you know, so the bureaus, they collate all this information.
Yes.
There are a number of bureaus. And I think in South Africa, there are three or four major bureaus. We're not really going to mention any names.
Yes.
And then there are quite a few that are coming up. And then there are a lot of banks as well who give you the possibility of looking at your credit score. So obviously, they just probably run a feed from the credit bureaus that they can let you see. The law in South Africa is quite generous. I think you're allowed to take out one credit report without having to pay for it every single year.
Yeah.
So you as an individual are free to just, you know, approach the bureau of your choice and you know, request a credit report every year. So, you know, that credit report will give you a listing of all the borrowings that you have with the different lenders, you know, how much is still outstanding, when you took out the facility or the loan, how much your repayment is, what your conduct is in regards to you know, to repaying. Are you paying on time? Are you paying late? Are you paying too much? You know, are you skipping payments? Have you ever, for instance, defaulted on a credit agreement, for instance, and when it is that you defaulted on that?
Yeah.
So all that information is there and you can access it. And, you know, as part of a standard sort of application for credit, you actually need to give the bank consent to check your credit, you know, to check your credit record for their own comfort.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that if you then do turn around and say, look, I don't want you to check my credit record,
like,
the banks may probably turn around also and say, well, we don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe let's err on the side of caution.
Yes.
We can't lend to you.
Yeah, lovely, lovely.
Yeah.
I think we're setting a very good foundation here because ultimately what we want to achieve with this conversation is how can one build a good credit score. But I'm starting here because I find that this conversation about a credit score, bureaus, are all obscure concepts that a lot of people don't really engage in. I feel like, who is this person? And we think it's a person sitting somewhere behind there. Of course, there are technically people sitting there, but there's always this obscurity that we always have when you think about, okay, credit score, who's this person and all those sort of things. So I really, really love that foundation we're building. And then I want to come back to the issue of willingness to pay. It is a very difficult thing to measure, isn't it?
Well, if past behavior is a predictor of future behavior, you know, the credit bureaus would have us believe that it's not as difficult as it is.
Okay.
And I think, you know, in this hyper-connected world, the number of data points that, you know, borrowers and lenders can reference in order to build what they consider to be a picture of how you conduct yourselves.
Yeah.
I think, you know, those data points, they're more and more every single day. So it is difficult to predict because ultimately it's human behavior, you know, and who knows the heart of man. I think even the good book says, you know, no one can understand what goes on in the heart of a man. But the truth is, you know, they are common sort of indicators that we would use to be able to say, you know, what's your willingness to pay? So a good indicator is if you've borrowed money in the past and you've paid it back.
Yeah.
you know, and you've paid it back on time and you've paid it back in full.
Yeah.
I think that's a good trait. It establishes a data point that says, you know, the person that is borrowed and repaid, are they more likely to pay back than somebody who borrowed and did not repay?
Yeah.
You know, look at ourselves in our own personal lives.
Yeah.
There are those of our friends who will tell you, listen, it's a bit of a tight month. I need a couple of thousand rand to make it to the end of the month.
Yeah.
And you are like, even if you've got a couple of thousand rand sitting in your pocket, you know, burning a hole and with no intended purpose, you kind of come up with some story or the other.
Yeah.
Or you just tell them flat out that you're not going to do that because you've lent the money in the past and they haven't paid it back to you.
Yeah.
So it's also very similar with banks in terms of assessing, or lenders in terms of assessing your willingness to pay. Your past conduct is a huge factor where that is concerned. Yeah. Even more so, I would like to believe, than how much you earn.
Yeah.
Because I think we've spoken before in past programs of how, you know, some people, because of the amount of money they earn, they just make really big money problems simply because they earn a lot more. So they can build a million rand hole because they earn 2 million rand. Mm. So it's not necessarily always how much you earn. Your willingness to pay is really, really important. And your behavior in the past is considered to be a strong indicator of your willingness to pay in the future.
Mm. You just threw 2 million there like it's no one's business, Teach. So I don't know. You can't just do that, man. You know, you're triggering us here.
I can take a couple of zeros off it. It was just illustrative. So, you know, let's take off 2 zeros and leave it at 20,000. Is that better?
You're triggering us, man, Teach. You know, 2 million when you earn 2 million, we want to get to that point. So yeah, let's.
You and I both.
Lovely, you and I both. Lovely. My bosses are listening, so they'll get me to 2 million, and we'll share a bit of that. So this is a good conversation. Now there's this thing around people who have no credit history, and I see this quite a lot with young people when they start working. They want to buy that car, they want to buy that house, and obviously they don't really have a couple of hundreds of thousands lying around. And with even entry-level cars becoming very expensive these days, a decent house is somewhere in the 1 point something million to 2 million, just a decent house, like a two-bedroom and all those sort of stuff. So they don't necessarily have the money. But they are told that you must go and open a clothing account here and there, you know, so that you can build a credit history of some sort. And I find that almost half the time, at least from the ones that I've been exposed to as well in this kind of work, we find that they run themselves into financial problems. Is that a good strategy?
So we're gonna answer that a little circuitously, if you can indulge me. You know, the last conversation we had, we said that, you know, you are subject to the rules of a financial economy, whether or not you decide to participate. You are an inadvertent participant, right? So, you know, you are in the system, you feed the cycle, you contribute to it in whatever shape or form. And, you know, this whole credit scoring system is a system that has been put in place to safeguard, you know, both lenders and borrowers. So if you look at the origins of the National Credit Act in South Africa, one of the reasons why, you know, the National Credit Act was seen as necessary was to bring transparency to lending as well as borrowing, because given the history of the country, there was definitely a feeling that if you had a little more, if you had probably a little less melanin than other people, you were more likely to be to be able to have access to credit than people that had a little more melanin than others. And access to credit, I think, is generally accepted to be a great way to leverage your earning potential and actually create physical wealth. So people that have conducted themselves, you know, diligently and prudently with credit, have been able to get to that place where they own a home, they own a car, they're able to pass on those assets to their children and actually be able to create generational wealth. So So I think it's important for us to say that up front, because I don't want us to leave with that sort of narrative that, you know, credit is bad. I think there's a place for it.
Yeah,
it needs to be managed properly. And when you manage it properly, you kind of then get the right results. So when people say to people, you know, establish a credit rating, perhaps get an account that you demonstrate the ability to be able to manage.
Yeah,
I can see a place for that. I can see why people would say that. I don't always know that whether people follow up that suggestion with an actual conversation around how that account needs to be managed, and how you need to conduct yourself. So typically for a lot of people, you know, you take out credit and they tell you, oh, you qualify for 3,000 rand.
Yeah.
Right. And so you go out there and you pick up all these fancy clothes and now it's 3,000 rand, but there's a repayment that needs to come through at the end of the month. So, you know, you almost want to do a needs assessment and then also do a repayment capability by yourself to say, So it's not a case of how much credit do I qualify for.
Yeah.
It's what's the repayment that I can afford to make. And I think right at the beginning, it's a very dangerous place because your credit reference bureau is empty, right? There aren't any repayments. Yeah. So maybe a clothing store or chain of clothing stores says to you, oh, well, you know what, let's give him 5,000 rand worth of credit.
Yeah.
But because it's a relatively low amount in their estimation and you don't have anything else, their assessment for your 5,000 rand is more likely to be incorrect than not because, you know, you're doing a lot of stuff that's probably not passing through there, passing through like any bureau of sorts. So it's up to you to be judicious. So while I would say if you feel that credit will help you to achieve the goals that you want to achieve in life, by all means do it, right? But be careful when you take out that credit that you are not putting yourself in a situation where you cannot repay. So I had a conversation with somebody that I could possibly name and out to a lot of people. But let's call this person X.
Yeah.
Now, person X wanted to buy a car a few years ago. And I said to person X, so how much money have you got? And he seemed to be a decent person. I'll try to even protect their gender.
Yeah.
But if they're listening, I think they'll know themselves. And you know, and person X said, I've got X amount to spend. And I said, oh, okay, that's really cool. So you can afford to buy car B. And he says, no ways, I'm going for car C.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, okay, how much is car C? And he says, well, I can afford this repayment, you know, so I can definitely afford this car. And I said, well, firstly, you're probably right, but you now need to insure that car as a starting point. Insurance is not going to be anything less than call it D amount.
Yeah,
you are going to need to now fuel that car because you're going to drive around, right now you're not driving around. You're using public transport. You spend half your days at home, and it's only going to cost you, fuel is going to cost you a little bit more.
Yeah,
you're going to need, you know, maintenance. Those tires within a year are going to need to be replaced, or maybe you need to put some money aside for you to take care of your car. So by the time we got to the end of that story, you know, this person suddenly found that, oh, they actually couldn't even afford the car that I had suggested that they should buy.
Yeah.
And you know, they were quite upset. And I was like, hey, look, listen, I'm your friend, right? I'm not trying to rain on your parade.
Yeah.
And so that is one of those things that you need to consider as you are trying to build a credit score, right? To say, well, you will go in there and they will tell you that you can afford a 5,000 rand repayment. But you need to be honest with yourself, because ultimately you are in charge of your affairs. You need to not necessarily access the full amount of credit that is available to you. You need to be able to still do a repayment capability, because remember, even if, you know, even those with the best intentions, and I know that there are all sorts of data points that we can use right now, you know, there are still a lot of things that are a reality for us that, you know, will not pass through a credit score. So if my dad phones me today and tells me that his leg is sore or broken or whatever, and he needs to go to the doctor and he needs 10,000 rand, I'm going to find that money without blinking an eyelid. And then the end of the month is going to come and I need to give Banksy their money. You know, that creates a problem for me. And that's not Banksy's problem. That's my problem.
Yeah.
But perhaps also if when I had taken money from Bank C, I hadn't gone and taken as much as I could, I could probably still have that buffer. Because I think those are the things that then put up people in problems. It's not necessarily that there is a willingness or an unwillingness to pay initially. Yeah. It's just that life happens and you find yourself without a buffer. So if you're choosing to pay back Bank C or to look after your kith and kin, the majority of us will look after our kith and kin and we'll deal with the bank later. But the reality also is that we could help to assuage that situation by not necessarily always maxing ourselves out. And that's one of the ways to actually manage your credit rating, right? Your credit score. Because if your credit score is showing that, you know, you've got an extra 10,000 rand every month and you've got debt repayments of, call it, you know, 9,800 rand a month. You're actually not the greatest person to lend money to, because when life happens, you're going to default really, really quickly.
Yeah.
So to the example we cited, where now my father needs me to step up and help him with a medical bill or whatever it is. If I'm already, like, you know, spending 9,800 of my 10,000 that I can afford every month on paying debt, it means I've got 200 bucks to help my father out, and that's not going to be enough.
Yeah.
So I'm going to look at the people I owe money, and I'm going to think to myself, Tapelo is a nice guy, he's a Christian, he's unlikely to come banging on my door at midnight. So let me take this 5,000 that I was going to give to Tapelo and, you know, and help my father out. So one of the ways to manage your credit rating is to actually not necessarily always max out, you know, how much credit you have. You know, create that breather so that when life happens, you don't necessarily impact your credit score. Because one of the things that impacts your credit score, you know, in that assessment of your willingness to pay, is whether or not you are honoring credit agreements. So when you go and you borrow money, you know, they ask, they tell you, listen, we're going to give you 10,000 rand. We want you to give us 500 rand back every month on the 25th of the month. Now, you pay your 500 rand every month, right? But your agreement says pay it on the 25th and you decide to pay it on the 41st. In your mind, you've paid back and you've done well. You've paid back, right? But the credit bureau keeps a record of the fact that, well, you actually paid on the 41st.
After.
So there's possibly an unwillingness to pay, and then maybe at the end your conscience got the better of you and you repaid. But we also don't want the extra hassle of having to look for you to pay us back our money, right? So we score you a little less. So you can find yourself that you've got these credit agreements, you're paying back every single month, as you put it, and you're not behind, but you're not honoring the date of the repayment. So you know, your lenders are a little less excited about lending to you, and it also reflects in your credit score. You know, so
really, really lovely.
I know we started from, you know, taking out your first know, borrowing and then meandered right through, but I just thought that it touched on a couple of things that were
definite.
Really, really important. Yeah.
Definitely. I think it touched on quite a lot of the other stuff that we were going to talk about. But I wanted to as you were saying, there was a short thing about someone that I also a friend won't mention as well. But they were saying, you know, the nicest thing about owing a bank, and I'm not trying to give people ideas here. What we are trying to say is pay the bank. You know, pay your debts and all that. So they were saying that the nicest thing about owing a bank is that you can pass through their branches and no one is going to stop you. Unlike owing a Teach or a Tapelo, for example, who when you meet in church, you always go like, hey, yeah, no. Even when you're singing, it almost feels like you're singing for them. And then when you go out of church, they'll be like, how mzalwane, wacula kamnandi kangaka. You know, today you sang very nice. Where's my man?
Exactly. So you raise a very important point there, Tapelo, in a very joking manner.
Yes.
I know that we live in communities, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we can get help from others, and we can also stand in the gap and help others.
Yeah.
But I think there are a couple of things there that we should talk about in as far as the credit rating is concerned. So we briefly spoke about the National Credit Act, and we spoke of why the National Credit Act was actually brought into being. And one of the main reasons was to bring fairness and transparency in the lending environment. And what it also does is it also then requires lenders to be licensed by the National Credit Regulator.
Yeah.
So the first thing is, you know, while, you know, as people we do this amongst ourselves, very few of us, if any, actually do hold, you know, licenses to be granting credit to people. So that's the first thing. But the second thing as well is, because we are lending money in an informal way, sometimes we may find it difficult to enforce our rights.
Yes.
And that's and that goes both ways. That goes both for the lender and it also goes for the borrower.
Yeah.
So, you know there are rates of interest that you can't charge, regardless of whether or not, you know, I am willing to pay that.
Yeah.
There are rates of interest that are deemed to be usurious and I shouldn't be charging that interest.
Yeah.
But if you go and you accept to charge that interest, I mean, to pay that interest to me, you have no recourse because you are operating outside of a regulated environment, right? It's an unregistered lender to a borrower who should not be borrowing from an unregistered lender. So we create a lot of problems there. The other thing as well is when you borrow from informal sources or from informal lenders such as that, your rights are not protected, right?
Yeah.
When you borrow money from me, Tapelo, and I get so upset that you haven't paid me back and I want to pull up to your house in my truck and start loading your sofas, you have no recourse, right? You are probably thinking, oh, okay, I do owe him money. Perhaps, you know, maybe this settles it. But that seldom ever does, right? But, you know, registered lenders have a, you know, they have a criteria that they must follow.
Yeah.
They have a process that they must follow. So even if you do find yourself in trouble, you know what the rules of the game are.
Yeah.
You know what recourse you have. You know what, you know what remedies are available to you, whether it's, you know, filing for rehabilitation or for debt review. There are all these things that are available to you. So we also need to be careful, you know, because now maybe the credit rating is so bad, the bank is not going to lend to you. So, you know, Titch looks like he's got some money lying around. Maybe let me borrow some money from Titch. You know, that can also create problems for you. Because now you don't know what Titch is going to do if he wants his money back. Titch tells you, here's 100 Rand. I want 500 Rand back.
Yeah.
You're so desperate. Maybe you're going to say that.
Yeah.
Now you get to a bad month and you're struggling and Titch still wants his 500 Rand. And Titch walks into your house and picks up the fridge with all the food for the month and says, hey, when I get my money back, you get your fridge back.
Yeah.
Registered lenders have a way in which they're expected to conduct themselves. And if they conduct themselves outside of those provisions, you have recourse to say, no, no one is saying I don't owe you money. But also, this is how we engage. And these are the processes that we follow when we get to this place.
Yeah.
That's really, really important for you to also take into account as you borrow money amongst Bazalan.
Yeah, love that. So two people here, Titch, as we tie it now. You've got someone who, you know, needs to build a credit score from scratch, right, from the very beginning. And then you've got someone who already has a damaged credit score. What's the most, I suppose, plausible strategy for each of these two people? Because I think that almost characterizes a lot of the people. Besides the one that already has a good credit score. So the one that are good, we'll leave them. Talk about them some other time. But here's one who wants to start afresh. And I think that was the basis of my question, especially for young people who are now starting out and, you know, getting into debt, take this and take that. Before they know it, most of them are in trouble. But the question might be, okay, so if I don't do that, what is it that I can do to build from scratch? And someone who's saying, I'm already in the ditch, how do I get myself out?
Okay, so I'll give you an example. A nephew of mine, he's also starting out.
Yeah.
He said to me, listen, Uncle T, I'm struggling. I'm going to struggle to make it to the end of the month. I need to borrow some money from you. And I said, hey, how much do you need? And he says, I need 500 Rand.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, well, okay, things must be really tight, you know. So I sent him 1,000 Rand.
Yeah.
Okay. And then after I sent him the money, he then says to me, hey, you know, I know I said I'd pay you on the 1st of May, but, you know, my money doesn't always come in because, you know, he's got these hustles going on. And he says to me, you know, I may pay you a few days after that.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, okay. But you wanted to borrow 500 Rand.
Yeah.
And he says, yes. And I said, and I've sent you 1,000 Rand. And
he
said, yes. And I said, so how's about on the 1st, you at least just give me back the 500? Because you actually didn't need it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then he says, oh, but now you're complicating it. I'm like, no, I'm not complicating it. You said you wanted 500 Rand.
Yes,
I've given you 1,000.
Yeah.
So how's about on the 1st, you at least give me some happiness. and you give me back the 500, right?
Mm.
And then, well, suffice it to say, the 1st of May came along, and my 500 never came.
Mm.
I then did get my money from him a couple of weeks later, you know, all of it in full.
Yeah.
But the whole point is he needed 500, and suddenly, because he could get more, his needs became more.
Mm. Mm.
Right.
Mm.
So this is the thing with access to money, right? Mm. Sometimes money makes its own plan. So when you're starting out and you apply for credit, right, be very sure what you want to use it for and use it only for that. Mm. Don't let that be determined by how much credit you've got. So I've said this, you know, a lot of people will go in there and say, yo, clothing store account, hey, maybe let me see. Because a lot of people start off with either a cell phone account or a credit store account. And the reasons are, you know, those limits are typically quite small.
Yeah,
they are not big, and the credit and the lenders there can take that chance. But most people will walk in there and say, "Okay, let me open up an account, right?"
Yeah.
And then now suddenly they've got a closet full of clothes that they probably don't even need. But the thing is, simply because I could access it.
Mm.
So what's important? So it's very important that you understand why you've taken out that credit. You want to build a credit record. You want to demonstrate your ability to borrow money and be able to repay it back.
Mm.
So the function of that is actually not so that you can, you know, have a closet full of clothes that you're possibly even not going to wear.
Yeah.
The second thing as well is take a long-term view, right?
Yeah.
So if you're accessing credit because you want to be able to buy a car in the future, you want to be able to buy a house and give your family somewhere to stay.
Yes.
Don't go messing that up now because you've taken a clothing account. So that's so short-sighted, because there are so many people that get to that place where, you know, now you're about to, you know, sometimes even take on a new job, because there are certain sectors where it matters what your credit reference bureau says about you and the nature of the work that you think you're qualified to do and the responsibility that is going to be placed on you, right?
Yeah.
I'd even go as far as saying, if you really want to be extra, you should be checking someone's CRB report before you get married, because you get married in communal property and then you want to apply for a bond and suddenly they tell you that your spouse cannot be granted a bond. And you're married in community of property, and now suddenly you start thinking, okay, so how do we get this home? You know, this guy, now we need to rehabilitate this guy. It's going to take another 5 years. We're going to continue to rent. So this has, it has far-reaching effects. So the most important thing that you need to know is your credit reference score and your credit bureau, those records literally follow you through life in a formalized economy that's driven by credit, you know, like South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So take a long-term view. Don't get excited, you know, because you know you've gotten the access to the credit. So that's for somebody that's starting.
Yeah.
You take a long-term view. Be very clear why you're doing it.
Beautiful.
And understand that it has far-reaching effects. It's not just going to end right there. For somebody whose credit, you know, score is messed up, you know, and this doesn't constitute, I wouldn't want to say it constitutes financial advice, because I think that, you know, that's a whole legislated field, and there's a whole lot of things we'd need to do before we can say somebody needs to you know, with that we can give you financial advice.
Mm.
I think the most important thing is arm yourself with information. And we've said this before in this series. The first thing is, every single year you are free to go and get a credit, you know, a credit report. The bureau report, you can access that without having to pay for it.
Yeah.
Imagine if you, you know, your credit is short and you're short on cash, you know, that 600 or 400 rand that they may charge you to access your report, you may find it to be a hindrance.
Yeah.
But every single year you're allowed to take it. So get that score, understand what is on it, and then make a plan to start managing it, you know, manage your creditors. A lot of people really just want to get their money back.
Mm.
And if you come up with reasonable terms and you start demonstrating that you are committed to the terms that you have agreed to, they will accept that.
Mm.
You know, they because if you're all just at an impasse where you owe the money and you are not paying, and they're phoning you and you can't pay them and you're not picking up calls, no one's winning.
Mm-hmm.
No one's winning, right? So if you are going to rehabilitate your credit score, the first thing is arm yourself with information.
Yes.
Take a look at the stuff that's on there. Be very sure that all the stuff that's on there is yours. You know, you know the credit agreements, and you know the terms.
Mm-hmm.
And then approach your creditors and start having conversations one at a time to say, you know what, I need to fix this. Because the thing is, even if you've defaulted and it shows, you know, once you've repaid that loan, I mean, that also shows that you've repaid it. Yeah. And, you know, that's not there anymore. So people may still hold it against you, but also after a time, you know, that record is expunged. It may take a few years. But once it's been repaid, it cannot be held.
Yeah.
It cannot be held against you. And then you'd probably start again, you know, go back to like the guy, you know, who's starting off. What do I need? What do I need it for? What is the purpose of this thing? Mm. What am I building towards? And then don't get swept away by the moment and get excited. Also, don't take out credit that you don't need. So in as much as you may, you know, you may apply, you may think to yourself, I qualify for 2,000 and they give you 5,000. You may also, because of earning capacity, have the ability to take out a second car on vehicle finance or buy a second flat or a second home on finance. But the questions you need to ask yourself are, do you actually need those things? Because what then happens as well is, you know, income is finite. And you may find yourself in a situation where you now do need to access credit for something that you actually...
Okay, seems like we are losing a teach there.
Because you may find yourself unable to access your needs because your wants are taken care of.
Love it, love it, love it, love it. Take a long-term view, young people, especially if you're starting out. But I love the points around make sure that you do talk to your creditors because this running away thing doesn't help. And I think a lot of people, I know that debt review and those rehabilitation are just a topic on their own. But there are some dire moments where, you know, it actually, we're not giving financial advice, like you said, but it really is an option to consider, isn't it? Because instead of just letting the whole thing get even more worse, rather get into review and start afresh again.
Yeah, the thing is, so one of the things, I've recently taken up a new sport, and having played sport like literally all my life growing up, you know, I'm finding this new sport quite challenging in that it's asking me to do things that I never really, you know, felt I needed to think about doing. And the people that play this sport, they always say, take your medicine. You know, there are times where you find yourself in trouble, but it's because you've put yourself in trouble, right? You've taken a bad shot and it's gone and it's landed in a not so great place, right? And you probably find yourself needing to play a shot backwards in order for you to be able to go forward because you've gone and landed in the middle of trees and there's just no way forward. And you need to play backwards. But you know, our instinct is no, but I want to go there. Let me try and go there. You try to hit this little ball through a tree. And then the tree actually, you know, makes a case for being an impenetrable object and shows you that you can't get through there. And now you're worse off, right? You've wasted a shot. You've moved 20 feet back and you're still in trouble. Or you could have just taken your medicine, played sideways, gotten back onto the fairway and then proceeded to the green, right? And I think it's also a little like life. When you do find yourself in trouble, take your medicine. Take your medicine. I mean, if that's what you need to do, then do it. Because otherwise the situation is not resolving itself. Yeah. It's only getting worse, you know. You find yourself at that point where now you're happily married and you're talking about, you know, let's buy a home. You can't tell your wife, you can't tell your husband that, hold on, I don't know if I qualify for credit because... You know, 10 years ago, I took a clothing account, and when they were phoning me, I changed my cell phone number. That record is still sitting there somewhere, you know. And now you're going to go and apply for that 4, 5, 10, 20 million rand home, who knows, because you can afford it. And they come back and say, but your credit score or credit record tells us that you don't pay back money. Yeah. You didn't pay back 5,000 rand. Now you want us to give you 20 million. You know, who do you think we are? So that long-term view is really, really important. If you are in trouble, take your medicine. And like I say, it's a highly regulated sector. There are certain rules there. You know, read up on the act, read up on what you can do, read up on how to engage. And you must also, in taking your medicine, also understand that your lenders are not going to be happy with you. They are not going to speak kindly. They are not going to mollycoddle you. That's part of your medicine. You know, you've put yourself in this situation. They also have pressure, because sometimes we do that. You know, you create a really terrible situation on the one side, and then you come back and you say, no, but they can't talk to me like that, man. Lo mfano ya delela is disrespectful. I'm old enough to be his father, and he's telling me I don't know how to manage money. But guess what? Maybe you don't, because maybe why are we here?
You know,
take your medicine.
A bitter pill to swallow, but take it. It's your medicine.
Take it. Take it.
As we round it off then, Teach, and I know this is an unfair question, but I think I'll ask it anyways. Because I think when you are in a dire situation like that, it's not really about time. It's about the goal of getting yourself out of that very muddy place that you found yourself in financially. Is there a timeline to getting to some sort of good credit record if you are impairing from a bad one?
So, you know, everything that has to do with people is always... is always subjective, right? And I always say sometimes, because we deal with people and there's an element of subjectivity, you need to do your bit to make it possible for the other person to exercise their subjectivity if they can, So, you know, if I'm in a bad financial situation and I have, you know, resolved this, and I was probably in a bad situation for 4 or 5 years and I've resolved this situation, it's year six. The person who needs to make a call on whether they lend money to me are better off making that call on the basis of all my other debt having been paid off than that debt not being paid off. And the reason I make that example is because I'm merely saying, you know, make enough of a contribution for you to be seen in a different light. The timing is not necessarily important, because these things are subjective, right? So, you know, once you go into things like an unrehabilitated insolvent, and, you know, you've had stuff repossessed and stuff like that, I think there are certain provisions regarding how long it should take you before you can start doing other things. And those, I think, are prescribed by law. But even then, you know, am I more likely to extend grace in my personal capacity to somebody who tells me, you know, 4 or 5 years ago I was in a problem and now I fixed it and it's not like that anymore and this is how things are. I think you're more likely to experience grace when you're in that situation as opposed to one that says, yeah, 4 or 5 years ago I stopped paying, the bank stopped calling and I stopped paying. So I think that story is finished. I'd be running away from you. I'd be like, what? So now you want to do this to me? So it's not, I can see why you'd say it's probably an unfair question, but I also think that, you know, if you take your medicine, you know, the timing may not be a factor. Because remember, what that then does is it restores the belief that you have a willingness to pay. So even if it's, even if you are unable to pay because you had problems, that suddenly becomes a more believable story, because we are demonstrating that when the problems ended, I was able to make my situation right, as opposed to coming and saying, well, I had problems then. And then next question is, well, do you still have these problems? Because now you're trying to borrow more money. Like, no, the problems are gone. Like, I was about to repay them because now you don't have the problems anymore.
Love that. Thanks, Teach. The greatest enemy is time. But really appreciate your insights once again.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Tapelo, and thank you to your listeners. I wish you all a good evening.
Have a good one. Goodbye.
Cheers. Bye.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.